This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits. Make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, another home run for Travis Darno. That is five home runs in his last eight official at-bats. Unbelievable.
There you go. Home run call of the day. Brandon Gaudin with the call, the Travis Darno home run. And for Travis Darno, that is the fifth home run in the last eight at-bats. Five home runs in the last eight at-bats. Great call by Brandon. Great home run by Travis. All right. Speaking of great, this is another great podcast. At BB isn't boring. At BB isn't boring. Is the socials. Obviously, I want to thank everybody who subscribed to the podcast, particularly left yesterday when we offered stickers. And we're going to continue to offer stickers. If you want to do this, we just sent out another shipment yesterday. So that was the opportunity to do to get some stickers, because I was sending out a shipment of stickers if you subscribe to the podcast and you gave a screenshot that you subscribe to the podcast, send it to me, either emailed me at rob.bradford@odyssey.com or just DM me at Bradfo, either one. But if you want to do that, I'll send you a sticker. Sure. Baseball is a boring sticker. People love them. They love them. So if you want to subscribe to the podcast and you want to get a sticker, it's a win-win situation for you. So do it if you want. Send me a screenshot. Boom, your day is better. All right, speaking of your day being better, this is a chance to make your day better by listening to Rich Hill. Always great. Always great. If you want opinions about baseball from a player who is still playing in baseball, yeah, sure, he's not going to play until halfway through the year, but still, if you want opinions, if you want to get a no-holds-barred take on something that's going on in baseball, Rich is the guy to turn to. Today, we talk about how whacked the baseball situation is in baseball, how they can't get the baseballs right, and then we also get into the injury epidemic. It's great. It's absolutely, Rich is always great. But like I said, I think in baseball, there's always that problem that you have when you don't have the guys in baseball who are willing to give the what's what, give their opinion, and hopefully enact some change. All right, well, I don't know if this is going to enact any change, but it's going to entertain you. Here's Rich Hill. There is no human being on the planet that I would rather have on this podcast right now than Rich Hill. And it's not just because he's wearing a Japanese baseballs and boring shirt. Do you wear that shirt around, Rich? Have you worn
it? Oh, yeah. What is that? Everybody says, what is that?
Do you get a lot of that? Do you scurry to their phone for Google Translate, or do they ask you about, and what do you tell them?
I just say it's baseball isn't boring. It says baseball isn't boring. Maybe this way. I don't know which way it is. I'm not sure. I don't know.
I don't know. We're 98% sure it's correct. The 2% comes from Joe Kelly, who insists that there's some hyphenation that's off. But, you know, no. I'm saying that the baseballs and boring Japanese shirts are correct.
They are in the hands of all the important people, including you, Rich. So,
yes, ahead. Thank you. It's official.
It's official. So, with that being said, the first thing I want to ask you is, you've always been a big proponent of baseball not being boring, but have you had a whole new perspective of baseball not being boring through the eyes of coaching young men, kids, while the major leaguers are playing, which is something that you've never done before? Do you have a new perspective of things?
Yeah, I think just the joy, honestly, watching the kids go out there and, you know, now it's little league ages that I've been working with, and our son is 12, so he's on the last year of his little league tour here. And but it's been great watching, you know, the 10, 11 and 12 year old kids just kind of come into their own and you know, make mistakes and have some, you know, go through the ups and downs of this game of baseball. But it's been great to watch the joy that they have just, you know, being creative and again, just having fun and interpreting the game the way that they are seeing it in that moment. So it's been something that I'm learning a lot of, you know, the patience side of it. And then also the understanding of when you're going to coach some of the kids that, okay, well, you know, you almost have to you have to really start from the foundation of where they are at in their career, because that's really where they are. And it's that part of that has been really exciting to see, you know, some of these teachable moments kind of catch on. And then you see the same kind of situation or, you know, a change in mechanics or whatever the situation might be that comes up. The adjustment is made, and that's a lot of fun to see. But then, you know, obviously seeing them get, you know, make a catch in the outfield, just even putting the bat on the ball where, you know, maybe it's been a couple of games where they just haven't gotten a pitch to hit or whatever, and then they make that contact and you see them sprint down to first base and just a smile on their face that either they hit the ball, you know, hard and they got on base with a base hit, or they hit the ball hard and it was just like, man, I just missed it. So it's, you know, it's just a whole group of, you know, beginning emotions that they're getting from playing the game, which has been fun to watch.
So do you think when you walk back into a major league clubhouse, let's say in August, that you are going to look at things differently?
Yeah,
you want to say yes, but you also understand that I'll speak for you. You want to say yes, but you also understand that you've been around major league teams enough where you just know what it is. You know, it's you know the rhythms of a major league team, a major league club, major league.
Yeah.
It is apples and oranges. We would all love it to be exactly like what you say, like the kids being so happy that, you know, little Johnny made contact after all year.
Yeah. And that's the one part. Like, I just think it's the beginning stages of, you know, who knows, right? Making it to the big leagues is literally half of 1% of the population. So I, you know, not to deter anybody, it's, but as difficult as it is, but it also gives you the perspective of how special it is. So, you know, I think that part of it, for me, is something that, you know, I've always had that perspective of being able to put on a major league uniform and feel, you know, pretty fortunate to do that. But I think also, you know, watching the kids where they're at right now and just how much fun they're having in the moment and in that day, and, you know, even how bummed out they are about a rainout, you know.
Oh, yeah. Rainouts were the worst.
You're not going to get, you know, I don't know. I'm too many guys that are going to be like, oh, all right, well, we got at least a day off, you know, in the big leagues. It is pretty nice when you do get a rain out, but then you got to make it up somewhere. But, you know, the short window of time to be able to play this game at whatever level is, you know, taking those moments and understanding how special they are. And that's something that, you know, I think that, going back into a hopefully going back into a major league clubhouse and being fortunate to be able to do that. That's something that, you know, the perspective will, it, you know, it might be a little, you know, hopefully it's, you know, as I get older, right, we start getting more emotional and sentimental. So I don't want to be out there on the mound.
Yeah, you know, you don't want to be the guys that, like, when they announce we're going to rain out, everyone's like, yes, a day off. You're like, what? No, I must play.
Yeah, yeah, we must play. We have to play. We'll play a doubleheader.
Let them play. Let them play. All right. So that's still the plan is still in place?
Yeah. Still in place. Been throwing. It's been going well. Working out. It's been, you know, feeling healthy. So, you know, just continue to keep trending in that direction. And a couple more months here of building up and get into a good position to, you know, go play.
Have you, in your preparation, have you looked in, you know how to get ready for a season, but this is a little bit different. And,
right.
And obviously, you know, we have, and I'm not saying this is apples to apples, but you know, you have these guys who signed late, the Jordan Montgomery, he started off good, and Blake Snell didn't start off good. And we have, you know, it is what it is. Have you taken a hard look into, okay, this is what I want to do. This is how to do it. This is how to prepare for this moment. And I don't know. I would imagine that the timeline is what? You probably want to, like, do a showcase or work out, like, in July or something? Is that?
Yeah, it would probably be in July at some point. But, you know, I'm still shooting for that August, September. So it would be those, you know, 2 months of playing. So I think that, you know, right now it's in the stages of long toss and, you know, getting the train back on the track, so to speak, as far as preparation wise. And that's been something that's, you know, been going very well. So, you know, I think as this progresses, you start to, or I'll start to gain a little bit more clarity of, you know, what direction to take, you know, take this as a, what position, you know, relieving, starting, wherever it might be, as we get closer to August. So
the way that they're falling off.
I hate to see it though.
We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that.
Yeah.
It's, you're going to be making like a 20, you're going to make like the Roger Clemens contract. Let's go.
Yeah.
You do hate to see it. So before I want to talk to you about, cause this is, we've had multiple podcasts now. We have Ben McDonald on, Rich. He was awesome talking about it. Kenley, you know, multiple guys. And, you know, there's a power ranking of reasons for the injuries. But first, you know, speaking of Kenley, your name came up in a press conference. When we were talking about Kenley complaining about the baseballs, this is what Alex Cora said.
I think a lot of people talk about it. You know, he was more vocal. But it wasn't about, you know, our guys rubbing it. You know, like there's rules about that and you have to do it a certain way. You know, they decided that when, like, 2 years ago, right? So just the big guy being frustrated, you know, and sometimes they feel like they're cue balls, to be honest with you. Now that I, you know, when I'm throwing before games, you can feel it, you know, it's hard, you know, and some people have expressed it, you know, this is the first time somebody here, well, probably Rich Hill expressed it a few years ago. Yeah, right? Yeah, baseball is not boring. Yeah.
All right. your response. I mean, yeah. I honestly don't remember you complaining about baseballs 2 years ago, but.
Yeah, I don't know if I was complaining about them 2 years ago. I've definitely complained about them, though. There's no doubt about that. And there's definitely, you know, I think going back to 16, if you go back to 16 through, I don't know, even 24. So the baseballs, the unfortunate part is that they haven't been able to figure out a way to stitch the baseball consistently, you know, by a machine that would make it, you know, it's the same as the next baseball, right? So if you got a dozen baseballs in a box of baseballs, you could have, you know, five different baseballs in that dozen, or you could have all 12. All 12 are going to be different. All 12 baseballs are going to be different. You know, you're going to find some discrepancy within each baseball, and that's because they're done by hand. You know, and they haven't been able to find a machine that can invert the final stitch of the baseball to keep the seams, you know, from coming out of the baseball. That's what I was told back in 2017, I believe. Mm-hmm. And you know, the issue with the baseballs over from 17 to present day 24, you know, was just the frequency that they were leaving the ballpark. And I think the inconsistencies with, you know, the stitching for the pitchers. And we saw that, I believe, now I'm not getting my date correct or year correct. I think it was 19. It was either 18 or 19 when AAA, which I was extremely happy that they did, because, again, the minor league baseball was so different.
Oh, yeah.
When I was coming up.
I remember a pitcher telling me they took the core of the baseball, of minor league baseball, major league baseball, and they dropped it. One just fell to the floor and one bounced up.
Sure.
So anyway, go ahead. I interrupted you.
No. That's part of, obviously, the, I think, some of the issue that was going on, or is going on, with the just the overall design of the baseball, or the inner workings of the baseball. So it was either 18 or 19 when AAA went to the Major League Baseball. And again, like I said, it was such a good move for baseball to do that, because now you don't have this kind of, what would you say, where you have to adjust as a pitcher. Well, you have to adjust when you come up from AAA to the big leagues to that baseball, because it's a different feel. It's leather. The AAA baseball at the time was more of a bonded leather, right? So it wasn't exactly, I don't believe it was 100% leather. And you know, you had a different feel for it. And you know, the minor league baseball, you could throw, it would actually hit the dirt and it wouldn't scuff. You know, so it was made, you might say it was made maybe better, because you could keep the ball in the game. Mm-hmm. With a major league baseball, if it hits the dirt, you know, it's out of the game, but it also, you know, rips the leather, or creates a scuff on the leather. Anyway, my point was that when, in conjunction with the AAA going to the major league baseball, home runs went up like 1,000%. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
So there is no doubt in my mind that, you know, it's undeniable. And then, you know, that something's different with the baseball. And then as far as, you know, the feel and the different, you know, stitching on the baseball for the pitchers, you know, it wasn't consistent with the product. Like every time you would get a baseball, a Switzer baseball out, it was different.
One of the things Ken Lee was complaining about was that they weren't rubbed up. Like, so he's getting a bunch of, as he called them, pearls, you know. It's just, and this has been, you know, we had Strom on last year, and he was like, you know, you put your hand in a bucket of balls and you're getting something different every time you put the hand in the bucket of balls. Again,
right.
This seems to be continuing problems. The latest, obviously, like I said, when you don't have any sticky stuff or any semblance of sticky stuff, or, you know, and on a cold day, on a ball that's not perceived to be rubbed up. And then, you know, and then as Kelly said, he was getting better balls that he was warming up in the bullpen than he was actually on the mound. So I don't know. It just seems like a mess.
Well, I mean, the other side of it is, who can talk about this? Just the pitchers, really, because nobody else is using that tool. Nobody else is using that tool on a daily basis. So they don't understand. It's not going to say like, oh, well, who cares? Just use the baseball. Well, it matters because, you know, now, obviously, we can measure it through TrackMan and other devices, but with every, degree of movement that we're getting on the baseballs, it does matter if the baseball, you know, you could throw a sweeper at whatever, you know, 14, 15 15 inches of sweep on it, and you know, a difference, and it catches a different seam, and then another baseball catch, you know, same grip, different seams on the baseball, and we'll move, you know, 17 or 18 inches. So it does matter, you know, with the consistency of the product that the pitchers are using. And I also think that it matters when, you know, you're pitching in a game in Texas in April and it's hot and humid, as opposed to a game in Boston in April when it's cold and wet and, you know, dreary out or whatever. You know, so the grip, the environment is going to dictate the grip for the pitcher, right? Now, this is where I think baseball wants to divide pitchers and put them against hitters, and say, well, you know, if you're enhancing the grip for a pitcher, which this isn't the case, the pitcher, all a hitter wants to do is get their A swing off. All a pitcher wants to do is get their A pitch off. So, you know, in any climate, the hitter is allowed to use whatever they want to be able to achieve the grip that is appropriate for them to get the A swing off. But that's not the case for the pitcher, right? But why is that? Why that's there that that doesn't seem to make sense to me. It's the same reason for golfers who use golf gloves, because their hands sweat. Maybe some player sweats more than the other player. And, you know, is that an unfair advantage? Why can't they have the same grip as the guy whose hand doesn't sweat as much? You know what I mean? It just makes its logic sense that we need to come together and find a product. And on top of all this, baseball has been working, Major League Baseball has been working with DuPont. They've been working with Chalkless, a company that's here out of Massachusetts. I think Dan Duquette is working with them, and trying to come up with a solution to make a consistent baseball, whether it's in Seattle, where it's 65 degrees all year long, or you're in Boston in July, and it's 100% humidity, and you're you know, sticking to your seat, right. Your nice red, your red comfy hot seat down the third base line.
Yeah. It's, but you hit the nail on the head. It's like, why can't we all get together? Like, this is the problem and this is the problem I think across the board is that why can't we just all get together and just reach some common sense with this stuff.
And it's right there in front of our. It's right there for everybody to get together and do it. And there is a solution out there, or something that can be done. And talking with multiple hitters and pitchers on both sides, everybody, you know, has been in agreement to saying yes, something needs to be done in order to create a product that, you know, achieves the same. Feel on the baseball, no matter, again, you know, if you're in Chicago in July or you're in Boston in April, right? So completely gonna, you know, the environment dictates the grip on the ball. And, you know, when that environment keeps changing and all you're using is that rosin supplement, I think something needs to be done with the baseball in order to make a more consistent grip. And it, you know, again, like I said, with golfers use golf gloves so the glove doesn't slip out of their hand so they can achieve an accurate shot. You know, hitters can use whatever they want to be able to. If hitters just used wood and rosin, home runs would decrease by a tremendous amount. You'd see more, you know, hit and runs. You'd see more bunting. You'd see the game would completely change. It would change. But you know, I think as far as trying to create a, you know, and that's been my argument. Why is a hockey puck a hockey puck? A basketball is a basketball, and a football is a football. But a baseball, you know, it's a baseball. But you know, you get a dozen different or 12 different balls in a dozen. So I don't know what the solution is, but I like I said, Major League Baseball has been trying to work with companies. They brought baseballs around and said, you know, hey, will you play catch with these? Try these baseballs out. Now, that was, I think, in 2021 when they were doing that. And then that initiative kind of went away and stopped. But I don't understand why it did. I don't understand, because they knew that something was, you know, needed to be done. And then, you know, maybe it all came down to money.
But, you know, you say, well, how are we going to get solutions to this? And, you know, I joke about what Alex Cora said about, hey, you know, no players, Ken Lee talked, but no players really talked, you know, except maybe for Rich, you know, 2 years ago. But he's right. I mean, this is part of the problem, is that when Ken Lee talks, yeah, everyone can say, oh, well, Ken Lee, he's making excuses, whatever it is. But it's a real thing, and I've heard it from different pitchers, you know, the murmurs, whether it's – and this is important to have people like you, to have people like Kenley, to have people who are secure in themselves to say, hey, listen, we're not just throwing stuff against the wall here.
Yeah, and it's not like to – I'm trying to figure out, you know, a everyday kind of, you know, something that – you can relate it to what is relatable to this situation.
I think you came up with some good ones already though. The golf.
Yeah. The golf. Well, even, you know, other sports, right. Yeah. And I mean, if you know, if we look at a hockey stick over the course of the history of.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
Two stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.
Of how that's evolved, right? If you go to Dick's Sporting Goods and you pick up a hockey stick, a wooden hockey stick, right? No grip on it. And then you go to one of the, you know, carbon fiber hockey sticks they're making now. The weight has changed, the flex, the kick point. They're completely redesigned everything in a hockey stick in order to create a better shot for the player. And the grip on the stick is, you know, completely siliconed all the way down the whole shaft of the stick. So how does that, you know, they've made improvements in other sports and baseball hasn't, right? Now, how come pitchers can't be golfers and have their own baseballs, right? Well, hitters can pick their own bats. They can have their own bat companies.
Right.
They can, right? But what about pitchers? Why can't pitchers say, I want to be Rawlings, I'm Wilson, I'm Titleist, I'm TaylorMade? Why is that? What's the issue with that?
Well, it all comes, you know what it all comes back to, and this is, which is
money.
Can you do that again?
That's pretty no.
Money. So this is where I have the Cuba Gooding Jr. show me the money clip. All right. Well, we're solving the world's problems one step at a time. That was the first one. The second one is, Rich, I'm going to ask you the way that I've asked other people, which is the power rankings of reasons for these pitchers' injuries. Now, usually when I ask this, the person I ask it to gives me one, their top one, and then we never get to number two. But we know there's a two, a three, a four, or whatever. So, you know, for instance, you know, you have the pitch clock, you have the lack of the sticky stuff, so you have to grip the ball harder. You have guys, pitchers obsessing over velocity and torque from a very early age. You have, I don't know, a bunch of stuff.
Sure,
so you're a student of the game. What is your power ranking?
What would volume? Be volume, amount volume. Of throwing, the wow. amount of throwing that is going on with. In conjunction with the chase and velocity, not only the chase and velocity, but the chase and, you know, enhancing, not enhancing. I don't want to use that. It's not the correct phrase, but making their abilities, maximizing their abilities. But the volume really is the number one issue. So if you're just playing catch and you're working on a throwing program, you know, as a starter, we'll go as a starter. And, you know, you have your 5-day program, maybe day one, you're just playing light toss or, you know, throwing balls in during batting practice just to get your arm moving a little bit. Day two, you know, you're playing a little bit more of a game of catch, maybe stretching out to 90 feet, Some guys, that is their bullpen day, and some guys have their bullpen day on day three. You know, and day three is another heavy workload day to, you know, pick up the ball and just putting more stress on your arm on that day three. So that's 2 days removed from a start that maybe threw, let's just use 100 pitches as an example. But really, in reality, it's probably closer to 200 pitches with the warm-up pitches that you've thrown, and then also in between innings, and then your warm-up pitches for the game. And then day four, the day before you start, you know, you're probably playing light catch again, and then you're back to another heavy workload day. But what I've seen and what is going on is in those days in between. Now, that's just like a normal kind of abbreviated talk on like a 5-day throwing program, right? And then, you know, but what I have seen is the increase in the weighted ball usage. So now you're coupling your throwing program with more volume, because you're going to go and you know, you start off with doing a weighted ball kind of warm up or some throwing program with the weighted balls before you actually go out and throw a baseball. But I don't know how to quantify that volume of putting a 1 or 2 pound ball in your hand and doing reverse throws, or putting, you know, a 9-ounce ball in your hand and, you know, doing some modified throws against the wall or with a catcher, and what that stress and how much stress that actually is, what the equivalent of that stress is to just one throw, right? Mm. So if you can equate one throw of a baseball to one throw with a 9-ounce ball, so the baseball is 5 ounces and, you know, the weighted ball is 9, 8, 7, 6, 4, 5 being a baseball. And then, you know, onward up from there too, you know, you have 11 ounce, 12 ounce, and higher, but how much stress is that putting on, you know, your UCL, I was just reading, I think it was it Merrill Kelly just went down with a Terry's minor strain in his shoulder. Now, I have no idea what everybody's doing for throwing programs, but, you know, the amount of UCL injuries that are happening is an epidemic, right? I mean, that could be, yeah. And what we're seeing at the major league level is only what we're seeing at the major league level. So what's going on in the minor leagues? What's going on in college? What's going on in youth baseball? And, you know, this chase for, you know, something that we're kind of getting off track about what pitching is. It's not throwing. You know, we're not just throwers out on the mound. We got to get back to the sense of changing speeds, being deceptive, understanding, you know, how to move the ball in and out of the zone, up and down, back and back of the plate, front of the plate, and pitch and get back to pitching. And I think that, you know, if we make that quote unquote sexy again, instead of, you know, chasing velocity, I think that's something that may help, you know. And the other side of it too is like, well, if you can do it at 100 miles an hour, isn't that better? Yeah, of course it is. Of course, yes, it is. It's way better. And that would be awesome. But I just don't see that. There's great stories out there of guys that, you know, I was throwing 80 and then I got on this program and now I'm throwing 93 miles an hour. Well, what you don't see sometimes in those testimonials is that the kid was 17, had never been in a weight room, had never done really any training in his life. And naturally, that's going to happen. Mm. You know, kids are going to get bigger, faster, stronger if they haven't done any work before.
Well, that's why, not to interrupt, but that's the thing about Tommy John surgeries, which I learned a long time ago. It used to be like guys coming back from Tommy John, they're like, oh, you're throwing harder. You must have a magical ligament. No, it's because you were able to train your body right in a way that you had never trained your body before.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. Well, I did it. You did it. Right.
Well, I mean, you know, being able to have that time to really be able to get your steering wheel, your shoulder, strong and overall in a great position to maintain the workload for an entire season is the key. And that's really the secret to longevity, is that shoulder health. The elbow issues, when they do occur, and they happen for a multitude of reasons. Mine happened because of fatigue and an increased amount of volume. When those two things meet and intersect, you're going to have an injury. And, you know, I think that's what we're seeing is, I'm not 100% sure if it's the increase. Everybody wants to, I think there are benefits to the weighted balls. I think there are benefits.
But if you do it the right way.
Right. If you do it the right way, but then if you were going to do a weighted ball program and I was going to do a weighted ball program, those are going to be two different. Everybody is different. Mm-hmm. So every program has to be completely designed for that individual. And I'll say it here as an announcement, first time, what I think, baseball should do on the youth level, after being in it for, a couple months now, is go to a 4-ounce baseball for 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds, maybe even the 10-year-olds. I don't know. But I think that the 4-ounce, they're throwing a 5-ounce baseball. That doesn't change all the way through till you get to the big leagues. I mean, obviously, when you get to, it's the same ball in the big leagues as it is in youth baseball.
Right.
As it is in Babe Ruth or whatever. But I think that it starts at an early age too. And it's going to be a huge overhaul of the system as a whole. I'm not 100% sure what the
I like that solution though. Is, but, I think that you talk about volume. Think about this, Rich, and I forget who had surfaced this to me. A lot of the guys getting hurt now are of a generation of a generation where it had become more specialized in terms of like you said, throwing baseball year round, throwing baseball harder. I mean, we're talking about, and I'm not picking on, like a Spencer Strider, right? Whatever, he's mid-20s, late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
Those guys coming up had a different mindset and a different routine and a different regimen and a different expectation than you mm-hmm. did when you sure. came up as a youth yeah. baseball player.
No, coming up, it was throw strikes. That was it. If you had to pick one phrase, right? And then I think if you want to say the generation that is net is kind of, the last 5 years is throw harder.
Yeah.
So it wasn't so much throw strikes, with these guys. I think it was, but again, I'm not going to sit there and say I'm not like, wow, this is awesome seeing guys like what the human body can do. But now I think we're running into a fork in the road of how much.
What's your limits? Tanner Houck was on the podcast. He said, and this is a guy who has insane stuff. Like it's
Tanner could go out there and be 96, 97. He just pitched a complete game the other day. I watched it. It was beautiful. 92, 91, sinkers, ground balls.
But he came on, he said, and this is the end of spring training, he said, I think that the human body is reaching its physical limits. And this is a guy who breaks off his slider like probably nobody, like except for you. He's right-handed version of you. So I looked it up the other day. Like speaking of which, like sweeper. So if I go to Baseball Savant and I look at most the biggest horizontal break from sweeper, like you're at the top of the list last year. And then so you would have a good perspective of what Ben McDonald said. Ben was really good. Like I really enjoyed talking because he took the time to really ask people, look into stuff. He rattled off each topic. So one of the things I've asked guys who's tried to learn a sweeper, and they said I stopped because it was hurting my elbow. And I'm not saying it hurts your elbow all the time, like obviously you one, but
yeah. Well, I also have had two. In when I was 39, I had the internal brace put in.
Right.
And was the first pitcher to come back and actually successfully pitch in the big leagues with the internal brace. And then in 2011, I had Tommy John surgery. So, you know, injuries are going to happen. That's like the, but to try, you know, to see guys going down at the rate that they're going down, it is disheartening, because I think also that it's, you know, baseball is a great game. It's a lot of fun and it's a beautiful game, but it's also now putting a bad kind of marker on the game for the youth, right? So now what we're seeing is this trend of kids that were, you know, the drop off of 80% after Little League. I mean, I don't want to see that go higher. I don't want to see that go into the 85, 90%. Right. But we're doing that with the health of baseball already, by cutting minor league teams, by cutting the draft, by eliminating jobs in baseball that, you know, otherwise people who wanted to be, that's my cat. I don't know if you heard that.
No,
it was my cat meowing. he agrees with me. Yeah,
it's but, good. You have a studio audience. It's nice. You take it next level. I like this.
Yeah. But I think that so now with the injuries, you know, where again you could be in Provo, Utah, and not have the opportunity to see, you know, Mookie Betts or a first round pick, a elite player that someday in the big leagues come through your town and say, "Wow, I get to see, you know, one of the best major league players ever." You know, stand here at this place, whatever, or just even other jobs in general, a general manager, somebody who got an opportunity to run the concessions, somebody who, you know, worked concessions, somebody who took tickets. You know, maybe that sparks something for a kid that says, "I want to get into baseball." Hmm. Well, it's gone now, you know, that's gone. So, you know, let alone, you know, the uniform issue. And these are things I know we joke about it, but it's the big leagues. It's the big leagues. Do better, you know, be better. It's just not, that's the frustrating part about it for me, because it's almost like a joke. And, it's unfortunate because, you know, it's, I don't know. It's tough to see where the health of the game is going, as opposed to, you know, the where it should be thriving. At the youth level, and we're talking here about injuries, and you know, I don't want to sit here and have this conversation. It stinks, you know, to see it happening. But what, you know, again, back to your point, the original, what is the solution for it? I am not.
Some good solutions,
bits and pieces of it.
Yeah,
but you were
saying,
what was Ben saying? Well, I'm interested because
he was. Just talking about, he went down the list really of, you know, you have the lack of sticky stuff because you have to now grip the ball harder, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's more torque. You know, the pitch clock was, Kenley actually had a very good case for the pitch clock. And obviously he had to rush things up, but he didn't just say, oh, he's making everyone rush. He talked about the recovery time, the oxygen that your muscles need to get, you know, replenish themselves, and especially when you're trying to throw harder than ever and do it boom, 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 which again, to me, it was a good way to look at it. It made sense. So, of course, you know, Ben McDonald was the GOAT, you know, in first round overall pick. And
I remember getting that. That was the chase for that rookie card. That was a good rookie card.
Yeah, and so it's the same thing. It's like, you know, throwing hard, and but he just went down the list, and again, he mentioned the sweeper, but it's not only the sweeper, it's manipulating the baseball. And one of the things is, and I think that he had a great analogy for it, you know, if you know, you're doing something that you're not used to doing, and then you do it. And, you know, that's your body's not going to be equipped to do it a lot of times, right?
Right.
And we're all chasing, you know, the one finger shit kicker or whatever it is. You know, it's like, we're all chasing the magic pitch, and we love it. We love when pitching ninjas like, look at this. I just saw a thing Sam Dykstra wrote for MLB.com about Paul Skenes. You know, Paul Skenes has this hybrid pitch, right? So we're all coming up with this. Well, that's all well and good, but you know, when you have a guy throwing something that his body isn't used to throwing, it has to enter into the equation at some point, I think.
Oh yeah, because you haven't, yeah, especially when you add the amount of intensity and torque and you know, everything that you're, the forces that you're putting on your elbow and your not just your elbow, I mean your knee, your hip, your back, your shoulder. You know, I think a lot of the main you know, talk for pitchers getting injured, we're always going to go right to the elbow. But how many guys are going down with, you know, back issues or lat issues or knee issues? Because, you know, you're not only intensifying the torque on your elbow, but your shoulder, I mean, everywhere else in your body.
Well, that's what Kenley was, you know, Kenley was saying about how he used the weightlifting analogy. You know, if you're lifting weights and you said, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, you know, power, like do it. And then and your form's going to be, you know, a little out of whack the more you hurry up. And the pitch lock isn't going to go anywhere. You know, I think we are in agreement. Maybe you didn't need to shave off the 2 seconds.
I had, you know, obviously, again, I'm still always going to be against the outcome of the clock. Right. I'm not against the clock. I'm against the outcome of the clock because I, you know, somebody who walks into Fenway Park and sits down the third baseline, pays $150 for a ticket. Here comes, you know, Rafi Devers coming up to hit. It's a 3-2 count. Oh, strike three.
Yeah.
What? What? I paid for that. So I think that you know,
but it made no sense, Rich.
Yeah,
there's a lot of things that you know they can make a case for the pitch clock. What they can't make a case for is, all right, we get it. Everyone got used to the pitch clock.
Yeah,
fine. Number one, let's take a breather. And this is another thing Kenley said, and I agree with him. Let's take a breather. It's not get prideful. What worked, what didn't. Is the time that we've set the correct time? And number two, why we all can accept that we've gotten used to it, certainly more in April than October.
Sure.
Then why are you asking us to get used to 2 more seconds off? Like there is, it means all that is going to do is going to exacerbate the injury problem. I mean, that's
and to Kenley's point and to what you're saying is, you know, I think that has something to do with it. And you know, is there a liability issue here? You know what I mean? Honestly, you know, at the end of the day, it's
That's what he said. An average major leaguer, you know, whatever, three and a half years in the big leagues. And that's another problem I have, and where, you know, you hear some people in baseball and they're like, well, the pitches are better than ever. People are getting more of a chance than ever because they're able to become something that they would never have become because of all these different measurements and mechanics and
everything else.
But the problem with that, okay, well, you're getting to become better, whether you're a major leaguer who's already there and becoming better, or someone who's not going to be in the major leagues and become a major leaguer, fine. But what is the toll that is going to take down the line? And that, I guess we don't know. So
no, you don't know. And I think at the other side, are guys ready, or are we bringing guys up too fast? Are guys getting rushed to the big leagues because
938 pitchers last year.
Yeah. Well,
in the big leagues.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, again, I don't, are we value, what are we valuing? You know, is it the progression of getting the player ready? And obviously from the business standpoint, it's W's at the end of the day, and we need, you know, guys that are going to provide, innings. You need to cover almost close to 2000 innings for a year. Right. So you're going to have to find the arms to do that. But seeing the guys, you know, rushed up to the big leagues, you know, on one end, you have the player who's excited because, like, I'm not going to say no, I'm in the big leagues and this is awesome. But again, if they're another year of development or 2 years of development, you know, and again, this is where it comes into cutting out the minor league teams. And guys are jumping from, you know, maybe the rookie ball league now, or whatever the development league that they're calling it, to double A, and then from double A to triple A, or double A to the big leagues. I mean, you know, the intensity that goes from pitching in a backfield game, obviously you try to create that in your mind. You try to create the environment and bring that same kind of, intensity that you would have in a major league setting. But just being, putting yourself in there with the fans and the moment and everything, it kind of, you know, raises your level of effort without you even really knowing it. Right. So now you're already putting more torque on your shoulder, your elbow as a young player, and you might see a spike in your velocity even when you get up to the big leagues because of, you know, obviously getting that kind of juice from playing in the environment, which you wouldn't get in rookie ball.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So, has any of your youth baseball players' uniforms ripped sliding this year?
No, they're actually, no, I'm not going to.
All right, just checking. Just checking.
Yeah, the uniforms, we have quality control here in Milton.
That's good. That's good. That's good. All right. Hey, listen, I appreciate it. We saw, as we always do, we solved a lot of problems today.
Yeah, it was good. Good luck in Cleveland.